Welcome back, everybody, to the Coaching Culture Podcast. My name is JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. On this podcast, we talk about leadership and culture, primarily with a focus on sports to help coaches. But you know, one of the amazing things about this leadership journey of mine that I've been on and I've shared with listeners the last nearly 5 years now through this podcast is how it's impacted areas away from sports, like in my life. One example of this is how Jason Gaddis, his book, and then talking with him, while my interest was in trying to learn how to be a better leader slash coach and to help other leaders, the applications, the things that I've learned from it, of getting to zero, they have improved the quality of my relationships with family, with my children, with my wife, in a significant way, right? And thus, it has improved the quality of my life, since I would rate the quality of my relationships as probably the single most important factor in the quality of my life. So this episode, while we're talking about working with our players in today's episode, I have just been practicing and applying the tools and applications with my kids. And wow, would you believe it? It works. So I'm really excited to share part two of my conversation with Jason today with you. Enough for me. Let's get right back into this Getting to Zero with Jason Gaddis.
I want to shift gears a little bit and ask you about something else that was in the book that JP and I have been talking about here for a few months here. And there's this phrase when it comes to understanding our feelings and our emotions. And a lot of times, and I hear this from my seven-year-old who sometimes struggles with her teacher at school, and I will hear when she comes home, she made me feel angry or she made me feel frustrated, right? And yeah. So I'm trying to work, you know, through this, obviously, in a way that a seven-year-old can understand. But that's not something that's, you know, unique to kids, right? I mean, there's adults that will still use the same type of language and say that, you know, so-and-so, my boss or my spouse or my children make me feel this way, and therefore I act, you know, in response to that. And I think there's a really important paradigm shift that you describe in the book when we can just change our language to, I feel this way when this thing happens. And I wonder if you could explain why that's so powerful.
Yeah, I mean, you described it nicely there. What happens when I say you made me feel is most of us go on the defensive if we're on the receiving end of that, because it's you made me do this. None of us like to be made to do something, right? So it's like, oh, you're forcing me to feel this way. It's like, yikes, I'm going to probably get defensive. I'm going to probably shut down. I'm going to probably, you know, check out or whatever. And so just a subtle, now it's true that other people do in a way impact us and kind of make us feel certain ways. That's of course, but a more skillful, and it's subtle, I'm glad you're picking up on this. The subtlety is when you raised your voice, I felt scared, is very different than you made me feel scared. And if a couple or a team or two business partners can understand that, they're like, okay, yeah, because then our feelings are still welcome. And it's tied to an act that I perceived happen, like when you raised your voice or when you shut the door or when you didn't return my text. Then we educate the other person about what's upsetting us. And that's also helpful. So I think it's subtle, but it matters. And I think we all become better communicators when we, you know, make that shift.
I absolutely love that, the intentionality around language. And I was just kind of curious, when it comes to certain skills that coaches should be using, like if there was, like, you know, you give a lot of great tools in the book, right? There's so many good things, but there's just, you know, two or three that you think, man, you know, as a ski coach or my son's swim coach or basketball coach or whoever out there, they just, if I could just give them these two or three, they would be so much better when it comes to conflict with their players. What would those be?
Great. Okay. Two. One is, I think the best coaches are relationally oriented in their own lives, because then it's just intuitive and natural on a team. But if the coach is very individualistic and having a hard time in his marriage at home, he is a gender here. Let's pretend the coach is a guy. You know, and he's sort of individualistic in his business. And let's say he's an entrepreneur and it's all about him. and he tries to run a team, it's going to be hard. So if we can, as coaches, become more relationally oriented in our personal lives, I think naturally it's just going to be an intuitive skill that's going to strengthen the team. And then secondly, so that's more of a maybe an intellectual context. And then another skill that's, well, let me do one more contextual one, which is conflict isn't a problem. It's an opportunity for the team and two individuals to get stronger. Just that mindset again, huge. Another one is listening. And I use a term I call LUFU, and it's an acronym that stands for listen until the other person feels understood. And we can help players actually listen to each other until they feel understood if there's a big conflict, which does take time. And as coaches, we can do it without our athletes or students even knowing that we're doing it. We're just listening in such a way that the kid feels seen, the kid feels understood, the kid feels heard. And that, man, that is huge when young people feel like, wow, this coach gets me. You know, they get me. And with a commitment to listening until they feel understood, there's a few basic skills in there that I could go into. Might take a while, but a couple key ones are bringing your genuine curiosity, right, about their experience. Remembering their experience is 100% valid. It has nothing to do with right or wrong. It's just valid because everybody's experience is subjective. And then when we validate their feelings, let's say, well, I'm pissed, coach. I'm pissed about this. I'm pissed about that. We can say, that makes sense that you're pissed. And we can tell them how it makes sense to us. It makes sense because, yeah, I see that you didn't get the ball. I see that you came in late to the game. And I see that that would be frustrating. And we had an agreement that you were going to do this. And instead, this other thing happened. Totally makes sense. You're frustrated. Instead of what a lot of young people get is, that didn't happen. That's not what I said. That's, you know, and this defend, defend, defend. So if we can instead do the more humble thing and listen to them until they feel understood, I think that goes a long way for teammates and athletes.
So many of the skills that you talk about, they even there, you know, they're, Nate and I are huge fans of and work with our coaches on when, you know, motivational interviewing tools, some of those, you know, open questions and those validating listening statements. And so it's just, you're so good at, because you give so many great examples within, you know, real life context, which I appreciate. My next question for you here comes back to more kind of a reflection on, you know, while you may not be able to speak to a lot of coaching experience, but maybe it's more in academics of what you see from teachers or coaches or people in the workplace, leaders, the ways that they deal with conflict that are just absolutely the dumbest way to do it. You know, like what are ways that we're screwing up, you know, and we're making things worse, other than obviously just avoiding it, which we talked about earlier. But yeah. What are some other kind of common practices for dealing with conflict that we should just stop?
Skip, yeah. I think the big one is pretending like we know what we're doing when we don't. You know, how many, especially men with big egos, it's like there's no willingness to learn. There's no humility. There's no receptivity. And it's sort of like, I already know. I already know how to communicate. Why are you telling me how to communicate? Like I'm already a great listener. Like that kind of person is extremely dense and dumb and very difficult to work with. So don't do that. Also, one of the things you don't want to do that people, I see couples and people do this all the time, which is start the sentence with you. It's going to be a complaint, right? I'm leading with a complaint about you. Using black and white language like always and never, that just tells us you're closer to the back part of your brain. That's more primitive. So you're more in your primitive thinking, which is very, very limited. These are some huge mistakes I see people make. What's another one? Here's one. And this is tricky with coaching because when we try to change people, right, you try to change a coworker thinking that that's going to, like, finally we're going to get our shit together and be successful as a team. Usually that doesn't end well. The person is likely in the wrong seat. You probably are likely not understanding their values very well, and you're trying to ask them to do something they aren't totally capable of doing. And they're kind of with you. They're saying, no, I can do this. I can do this. And then you keep trying to kind of contort them into the role. I think coaches do that on teams as well. When it's like, oh, this is kind of a swing and a miss here. Maybe we need to slow down, step back, take a breath, reevaluate, look at this again, listen better, try to find out if maybe we're in the wrong seat or the wrong role. Yeah, those are some thoughts. I could go on, but those are a few don'ts.
I got a little scenario for you here. I'm curious as your perspective on, and this is kind of following up on the LUFU idea of, you know, listening until they're understood. Because I think as coaches have evolved, and coaching certainly has evolved over the last 20 years to be more player-centric, maybe is the right word for that. Like there's more value in player input and sharing the why with your players and engaging them, you know, based on their strengths and that sort of thing. What I see coaches struggle with sometimes is opening the doors and saying, I'm trying to understand your perspective. I want to work together on this. I want you to feel heard. I want to genuinely understand your perspective better. What's been difficult, I think, for a number of coaches is how do we still land in a place where we're after solutions? I think with, you know, maybe this is just a teenager or a kid thing, but maybe you see this, you know, working with adults too, that, you know, it's one thing to come in the boss's office and say, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like that, and then walk out and leave and not be part of a solution. And I'm sitting here in our high school, we have our values, our athletic department values up on the wall right in front of me. And one of them is solution-based living. And it's something that our coaches are expected to do with our athletes is that we will listen, but then we are collaborating on solutions. But that's sometimes is really challenging. How do you bridge that listening, but also trying to land in that place of working together, collaborating toward a solution?
Well, let me ask you a clarifying question. Do you find the biggest challenge with yourself or the coaches you're talking about is with the student? They don't want to go into solution mode, or is it the coach that's struggling going into solution mode?
I think it could be either one, but I think as I'm just, you know, going through the roster of the last few conversations I've had about this, it's often been the student or the athlete that finally feels empowered to be heard, but doesn't want to take any responsibility to actually be part of change, you know, or to be part of a solution. And trying to communicate through that has been difficult for just some very recent experiences that I've walked through some coaches with. So,
yeah, interesting, because I love your thing you have on the wall there. Because to me, that tells me, oh, I'm stepping into a culture where solutions matter, and maybe the language could be even more clear. So I have two responses. One is, it's hard to teach someone to take responsibility for what they're going to do about the thing after they've been heard. Emotionally, they've been kind of listened to, and okay, cool, I feel understood. But maybe part of the gap there in terms of personal responsibility for the next outcome is that's just not taught. That wasn't part of the download. That's not part of the culture already. They haven't gotten the message that, like, no, we don't leave this office until we're in solution mode. And you're taking responsibility for one action step that you can do personally to make this better. If that becomes a norm in the culture of personal accountability for the outcome I want on the team or with the teammates or with the coach, like that's how we roll, and boundaries and the line is held with that, I think you're going to be a lot more successful, be my guess.
The thing I was just thinking about this as you were talking, like with our own kids, we have a phrase, you know, you mentioned the phrase that makes sense. And the one that we use a lot with our 4-year-old and 7-year-old is, I'm not sure, but we'll figure it out. And just that idea of we will together, we'll figure it out. I don't know what it is right now, but we'll figure out what we're going to do for snacks in 2 hours, or, you know, what time we're going to go to the park tomorrow. We'll figure it out. And I think that even that sort of communicates a confidence that we'll find a solution to this together, you know, and maybe as a way that even our own family kind of built that norm.
Yeah. So your kids are expecting it now. It's like, oh, this is how we roll. We're going to figure it out together.
There's one solution that you mentioned in the book that you mentioned earlier, which I was like, this is our most common one, I think, which is the apology. And you kind of knock apologies. You call them, you say something like apologies are like Band-Aids or something. And, you know, I've just was working through two different conflicts with coaches earlier today. And, you know, they're like, well, yeah, he took responsibility. He apologized. Right. And like, they felt like, well, things are good now, you know, like, why is that not enough from your perspective?
Yeah. Well, let me, the front load this with, it can be enough depending on who you're talking to. Some people, an apology does work. And it works. When I say works, what I mean by that is it settles the nervous system and the person feels safe again, like they can open up with you and they feel good again. That's when you know an apology is working. And too often, I call it the rushed apology. We say I'm sorry to just kind of move on and hurry and get over it. And that often doesn't work. And that's what we teach children too much is say you're sorry and just say you're sorry. It's like on the playground all day long. My kid made a really interesting observation about this on the playground. He's like, Dad, everybody says they're sorry, but nobody takes responsibility for what they did. And I was like, yeah, interesting. So I think what settles the other person's nervous system is ownership. I did this, I didn't do that. And then the next thing before the apology, if you want to add the apology at the end, fine. But before the apology is understanding the impact on the other person. And so we can say, yep, I take responsibility that I was late for class or late for practice. And I can imagine the impact on the team is blank. Or I can imagine the impact on you, coach, is blank. We start to teach people how to be empathize and go, oh yeah, I impact people. My choices impact people. I think that's better than just saying I'm sorry.
I think that getting them to reflect on their actions and how it affected the other person and just really challenging them with that rather than, well, I did something bad because everyone says I did something wrong. You know, like I think that's traditionally is like, well, you know, I shouldn't have done that or I shouldn't have said that because obviously everybody's really upset with me. I think that's powerful because I think I always, in the past, I've just, you know, once the player takes responsibility, I think I've encouraged coaches and even with my own kids, it's just like, okay, so what are you going to do to make this right? You know, but I haven't taken them really time to reflect on that. So I greatly appreciate that suggestion. As we're talking about all these things, you obviously work with, you know, people in a lot of different relationships in the professional world, but you've talked about how you work with kids, you know, and so you're teaching them various skills. And I was, you know, as these skills aren't just for coaches. And yeah. I was wondering, you know, what are a few skills that coaches could teach their players so that they can, you know, manage conflict or that we should be teaching our kids, right? Right now, my approach is if my oldest daughter fights with my middle son, I usually just walk away right now. Like, I don't know if that's the best way, but like, I'm like, all right, you guys talk to each other and you guys figure it out. It sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, but what should the skills that, you know, we should be teaching our kids and our athletes?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Thanks for that share. I think that's really common, by the way. Parents are just like, dude, this is like going on too much, too often. Like, I'm just going to walk away. You guys figure it out. Right. And that's sometimes the best we can do, and that's okay. And the challenge is if we only use that is they turn into adults who that's what they do when they're adults. Right. So that's the limitation with you guys figure it out is we're walking around a world where a lot of adults, that's the download they got. So no one knows how to work it out. And it's not very, no one's getting to zero. No one's getting back to a good place. And there's all this kind of pent up tension. Kids are so much more resilient than adults because they don't have the same history and the same baggage. So if we can just do a couple things with our kids and our young people in our homes, and even coaches could teach this to their kids, a couple of which I've already mentioned. Hey, in this family, we take responsibility for what we did or didn't do. That's how we roll here. When we blame, we will blame. That's natural. Yeah, it's your sister's fault. Yeah, it's your brother's fault. Yeah, they did it. Yeah. What did you do? Let's talk about what you did. I didn't do anything. No? Well, just ask her, what'd you do? And then she'll tell you what you did. He was mean. He threw the thing. And okay, so can you just say that? I threw the thing. I did that. Is that such a big deal? Was that so scary? No, so we make it normal and okay to take responsibility for a part. And my son now gets kind of judgy because he's 13 and we obviously live this stuff in our house. And he gets judgy of other kids because he's like, no one takes responsibility, Dad. Everybody else blames. Everybody at the school blames. Like no kid will just raise their hand and say, I did it. And they don't realize that it's actually faster to get in good relationships with the adult to own your part. Just raise your hand and say, I did it. The adult's like, wow, thank you for stepping up and saying you did something here. Because the teacher is dealing with every other kid who's pointing the finger at someone else and saying, I didn't do anything. And that's kind of the world we live in. So I think it's really powerful if we can really grill that in to our kids, which is I take responsibility for my actions. It's huge. And it's so basic, but how many adults struggle with this one? A lot. So that's big. And then we can actually teach young people to say, to listen better. And we don't have to teach them LuFu, although kids, especially middle school and high school kids, can learn LuFu, no problem. Is we can teach them to reflect back what they heard. So what did you hear? well, I heard that she's mad because I threw the thing and she thinks it's my fault. And great. Wow. Nice job. High five. You just reflected back what she said. How does that feel, sister? And then the sister's like, well, it feels better, you know? So that this basic level stuff goes a long way to start to instill really good habits in young people. And I think coaches can teach their players that.
I want to get you out of here on this one. I think when it comes to conflict, one of the most common scenarios that JP and I see is conflict on staff. Assistant coaches don't get on board, or from the head coach's perspective, they don't run what they want them to run. They don't interact with players the way they want to. There's not a consistency throughout the program. We could go on and on, right, about what the root of those conflicts are. And I think the way that those have been generally handled is that let's have an adult conversation. Let's compare our perspectives. Let's try to make it work for both parties, you know, in a way that we're agreeable to. And then we walk out of the room. And the piece that is missing, or at least based on what I kind of read in your stuff here, is that oftentimes we feel like that's enough, but we don't do anything to reconnect after the difficult conversation. And so I guess my final question here is, number one, why is that so important? Like, why isn't just agreement enough? And when you're in a relationship, whether it's a working relationship or even with players, you know, there are times with players we have to give correction. And okay, we're on the same page. I want you to do this and not do that. And then coaches don't work to repair the relationship. Like, why is that so important as part of the process?
Well, because if we don't repair and reconnect and then follow back up in a week or 2 weeks later to say, hey, how are we doing? How are we, you know, doing here? If we don't do that, we communicate, I don't want to talk about it. I don't think there's a need to follow up. We already dealt with that. Hey, we're done. And then that slowly again creates a gap and a chasm in the relationship, because we're overriding, ignoring, pretending to move on. And certainly in a high stakes relationship and an intimate relationship, that we all know where that goes. And that usually leads to divorce, because enough of those stacked on top of each other, it becomes very hard to repair that over decades, right? Really hard. And on a sports team, you know, I think the coaches have to realize, if the coaches are in a snag with each other, the assistant and the head coach, or the head coach and the owner, or whoever it is, it's like, look, do we want to win? We both agree we want this team to win, right? Or we want them to win, and winning means blank. Maybe it's not winning, it's a metaphor, right? Success looks like blank. Well, how are you and I in our relationship right now? How are we living that? How are we doing? I don't know that if we want our players to behave in a way that's like different, it starts here. We got to be different. And I know we have challenges together. You challenge me sometimes, I challenge you. You annoy me, I annoy you. We haven't synced up yet, and that's totally cool. We're pretty different. And I want the goal as much as you do and as much as the team does, but we're going to have to do this differently. And our modeling this has a massive impact on our players. Just like in a marriage, you know, if you're brushing shit under the rug, kids see that all day long. And that's the transmission they're getting on how to do relationship later in life. So is that what we want to teach our kids? So I think, you know, it's got to go farther than let's have an adult conversation. It's let's make sure we're at zero. And zero is, we don't have to like each other, but we are going to be a badass team, you and I. And we're going to use our differences and how challenging they are, and we're going to turn them into strengths. Are you on board with that? Should we do that? Because I think you have things I don't have, and I have things you don't have. Do you think you're up for that kind of level of like depth, transparency, grit? Do you want to do this with me? And, you know, we can enroll other people into that. And most people are like, dude, I'm in, you know? If they don't have to compromise their integrity to like work through this, they're probably on board. And then maybe if they're not, I don't know if that's a great person you want on your team.
Jason, this has been incredible. I want to respect your time. And so I really appreciate the book, first off, and I'm going to highly recommend it to all the listeners here. But for our listeners are, you know, they're married, they have kids, they're coaches, some of them are teachers. You know, when it comes to the problems that you help people solve, you know, what are those problems typically? and how do you serve them? So they and how can we reach you if they want to reach out?
Yeah, cool. One of the biggest problems I see in humanity really is this problem that we're talking about, which is two people don't know how to work their shit out. They don't know how to work out differences. And so they, you know, they go to their separate fences and territories and lob grenades over the, you know, metaphorical grenades to the other side. So I think we got a real problem with this, and I want to evolve culture, which is why I started the relationship school and why we do what we do here. And I think if we can recognize the crux of any good high stakes relationship is the willingness and ability to work through conflict, we're going to have better, stronger relationships. We're going to probably be more fulfilled and be better teams, be better team players. And perhaps that impacts our neighborhood, our communities, our schools, et cetera, and it kind of ripples out. But it starts with us, right? It starts with the person in the mirror. And we train people how to be relationship coaches. We have courses for couples. We have courses for individuals who want to just up-level their relationship game and their communication skills. All of that can be found at relationshipschool.com. And I'm on Instagram at Jason Gaddis. We have a podcast called The Relationship School Podcast. That's everywhere podcasts are played.
All right, a huge thanks to Jason. His time is super valuable. He has a thriving business with a lot of relationship coaches and an online course. He did this, I think, genuinely to help our listeners, to help you. At a minimum, check out his podcast, The Relationship School, but I really recommend Getting to Zero. Read it with your partner. It's powerful, really. If you really want to go even deeper, head over to therelationshipschool.com for his online course and coaching and more content. Thanks for listening today to the Coaching Culture Podcast. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe. To learn more about what we do here at TOC Culture Consulting, head on over to tocculture.com.